This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for the day.
Happy June to all you skeptics and skeptical feminists. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Can you believe this is our 215th show? We're in our fifth year of doing Free Thought Radio. This is the weekend of June 5 and 6, 2010.
Free Thought Radio is broadcasting in Madison, Wisconsin. We're also on the air in Atlanta, Anchorage, Grand Rapids, in Monterey, and podcasting everywhere.
And Free Thought Radio is a production of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation, the country's largest association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep religion and government separate. We are church-state separate purists on this issue, and we also work to educate the public about the views of those of us who are non-believers.
And those of us who are non-believers do enjoy an occasional priest joke, so you have one for us, right?
I think Jim McCollum sent me this joke by email. This guy was at the racetrack betting on the horses, and he noticed this priest early in the morning blessing a particular horse. So the guy bet everything on this one horse, and the horse won by a long shot. And this went on for a number of days. He saw this priest blessing a horse, so he would bet on that particular horse. And at the end of the week, he saw the priest spending an awful lot of time with this one horse in front of it, blessing, going around it. And the guy thought, this is it. So he took out all his life savings. He took everything he owned and he bet it on that one horse, and it came in dead last. So he went to the priest and he said, what happened? And the priest said, oh, you must be a Protestant. You can't tell the difference between a simple blessing and last rites.
We have a theme. And hey, that's a priest-blessed joke, because we have a friend who's a former priest, Tom Reed in Madison. He laughed when
he
told him the joke.
I heard that.
We have a theme this week, the harm of religion to women. And we want to take a look at several cases of religion abuse of women globally.
And we'll be discussing skeptical feminists and the new movie Agora by noted filmmaker Alejandro Amenábar and starring the excellent and very beautiful actress Rachel Weisz. The movie just debuted in this country yesterday on Friday in select locations. Annie, Laurie, and I haven't seen it yet, but we're enjoying the buzz. And this film is about Hypatia, the Roman scholar and pagan philosopher who lived in Alexandria in the 4th century. She was one of the most celebrated scholars of her day, appointed head of the University of Alexandria, who was set upon and viciously killed by a mob of fanatical Christian monks.
And we're going to talk on the second half of Free Thought Radio with Barbara G. Walker, the feminist and free-thinking author of the Woman's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets, has a new book out called Man Made God, a book which coincidentally does mention, and really not so coincidentally, does mention Hypatia in several passages.
And speaking about abuse of women in the name of religion, you might have caught the report in the New York Times earlier this week about the two little Afghan girls. They were 13 and 14 years old. They disguised themselves in boys' clothing to escape illegal forced marriages to much older men. A police officer at a checkpoint in Kabul sent them back to their remote village in Gore province, where they were publicly, viciously flogged for daring to run away from their husbands. Two videos of the floggings, conducted not by the Taliban, but by local mullahs and the former warlord, were smuggled out of Afghanistan, Independent Human Rights Commission, and released exactly a week ago. You can watch this chilling video at the New York Times website of the flogging on January the 12th. A UNICEF study found that 43% of Afghan marriages between 2000 and 2008 involved brides under the age of 18 and many younger, even though the Afghan constitution forbids marriage of girls under the age of 16. The Times reports that this case was notable for the failure of the authorities to do anything to protect the girls, despite opportunities to do so. They were sentenced to 40 lashes each. Although floggings are illegal in Afghanistan, the mullah administered the punishment with a leather strap, and you can hear the strikes. The mullah, whose name is not known, strikes the girl so hard that at one point he appears to have hurt his wrist and his hands, and he hands the strap to another man. The spectators count the lashes out loud, but several times seem to lose count. They have to start over, or maybe they can't count very high, as the Times reported. The Human Rights Commission took the videotapes to the district government. No action was taken. The two girls from Gore were among the luckier child brides. After the floggings, the mullah declared them divorced, returned them to their own families. The Times recounted a case 2 years ago where two girls sold into marriage fled after abuse. The Human Rights Commission said they were captured, forcibly returned, and their fathers, one who was the village mullah, took them up the mountain and killed them. Forced marriage of Afghan girls is not limited to remote areas. There are several shelters for women. One has taken in 108 escaped child brides since just January. One girl who was married at 14 to an older man was regularly beaten. Her husband tried to feed her rat poison. The worst case cited in the Times article involves Sumbul. It involves a 17-year-old Pashtun girl who said she was kidnapped, taken to Jalalabad, and then given a choice: marry her tormentor or become a suicide bomber. He said, "If you don't marry me, I will put a bomb on your body and send you to the police station," Sumbul said.
So there you have it. Marry your abuser or be forced to become a suicide bomber. And I wonder how many of these recent cases of women suicide bombers may have involved tormented and abused teenagers. Now, here's an unbelievable story from this country. It's equally barbaric. It's from a news story published in the Concord Monitor, New Hampshire. The reporter is Trent Spiner. It was published May 25th, and it was, by the coincidence, sent by Jim McCollum, whom you mentioned earlier. He was the little boy, now all grown up and retired, in fact, in the great McCollum versus Board of Education Supreme Court case of 1948, barring religious instruction in the public schools. So Jim sent me this article, and the headline reads, "Police, girl raped, then relocated. 13 years later, suspect arrested." And I'm just going to read part of this news story. After being raped and impregnated by a fellow churchgoer more than twice her age, a 15-year-old Concord girl was forced by Trinity Baptist church leaders to stand before the congregation to apologize before they helped whisk her out of state, according to police. While her pastor, Reverend Phelps, reported the alleged rape in 1997 to state youth officials, Concord police detectives were never able to find the victim. The victim said she was sent to another church member's home in Colorado, where she was homeschooled and not allowed to have contact with others her age. It wasn't until this past February that the girl, who is now 28, decided to come forward after reading about similar cases, realizing for the first time it wasn't her fault that she had been raped, she told police. The police have arrested Ernest Willis, 51, of Guilford, New Hampshire, last week in connection with the case, accusing him of raping the girl twice. He was charged with 4 felonies, 2 counts of rape, 2 counts of having sex with a minor. At the time of the alleged rape, Reverend Phelps was in touch with the police, who told him to contact the Division for Children, Youth, and Families, but moving the girl out of state prevented the police from collecting evidence or a statement. Without a victim, it makes it very difficult to have a case, said Lieutenant Keith Mitchell. So for 13 years, a file on the case sat closed and marked unresolved at the Concord Police Station. The leadership of Trinity Baptist Church reported this alleged crime within 24 hours, according to their spokesperson, and they say they are committed to their cooperation. But in her 7-page statement to police, the victim recounted what happened to her in that church and the moments leading up to her departure. At 14, she began babysitting for Willis, a well-known member of the church. Within a year, he offered to give her driving lessons. While in the parking lot of a Concord business, Willis asked her to pull over to switch seats. Instead, he pulled her into the back seat and raped her. In the summer of 1997, he raped her again, this time while at her home, while her mother was out. She said that he came to the house, he locked the door behind him, pushed her to a couch, ripped off her dress. She said no, pushed him away. I was completely in shock but too scared to go and tell anyone because I thought I would get blamed for what happened, she said. Well, she was right. Over the next few months, the girl became suspicious she was pregnant. She called Willis, who brought over a pregnancy test that came up positive, she told police. He asked me if I wanted him to take me to a neighboring state where underage abortions were legal and he would pay for an abortion, she told police. He then asked me if I wanted him to punch me in the stomach as hard as he could because that might cause a miscarriage. She declined both offers. The victim told her mother about the pregnancy. Soon after, Pastor Phelps was also alerted. The victim said Reverend Phelps told her she would be put up for church discipline, where parishioners go before the congregation to apologize for their sins. She asked why. Pastor Phelps said that Willis may have been 99% responsible, but I needed to confess my 1% guilt in the situation, she was told. The pastor told her I should be happy that I didn't live in Old Testament times because I would have been stoned. I am not making this news story up. Fran Earle, the church's former clerk, witnessed the punishment session. At a night meeting at the church's fellowship, Reverend Phelps invited Willis to the front of the room. Willis apologized to the group for not being faithful to his wife. Phelps then told parishioners a second matter was at hand. He invited the victim to apologize for getting pregnant. A day after the session, this woman, Earl, called the pastor's wife, who said the victim had decided not to press charges for statutory rape. And of course, it was not statutory rape, it was rape. And then she said, you've got to understand, we trusted our pastor and his wife to be telling us the truth. He reported it as a consensual act between a man and a woman. Well, I didn't know a 15-year-old was a woman. Earl had left the church in 2001 after 19 years and said it was regular to see young girls who were pregnant called to the front of the congregation to be humiliated. Another former member, Rob Sims, said the discipline sessions were formulaic. Phelps would read Bible verses, give a limited overview of what happened, and then each person would read a statement. The statement agreed that they had done wrong and why they now believed that they had sinned. Then Pastor Phelps would give a few closing remarks, and then a vote would be taken to remove the guilty party from membership or to keep them in membership but under discipline. The police said the victim's family asked for her to be moved to Colorado. I think that she clearly did not want to go to Colorado, and I'm quite sure she expressed that to the church, her mother, and the pastor, said Concord Police Detective Chris DeAngelis. However, she was a juvenile.
Well, that sounds like something from the Dark Ages, doesn't it?
And speaking of the Dark Ages, they were ushered in by the sacking of Alexandria. That was preceded by the murder of Hypatia, a classical scholar, by a fanatical adherent. And there's a new movie just out called Agora, telling this true story, of course embellished by Hollywood, of this heroine of history and freethought, Hypatia. So coming up, we'll get a preview of that film, and then we'll talk with noted feminist and freethinking author Barbara G. Walker about her new book, Man Made God.
Beware of dogma, it has a bite. Beware of dogma, it wants a fight. Beware of dogma, it will ignite a holy war by itself.
Hello, my name's Bernie from Sarnia, Ontario, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
You drop your mind, religious dogma, you make your blind, beware of dogma. It's not time to let you think for yourself.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker.
Don't have agoraphobia. We've been talking about the harm of religion to women in cases emerging in this past week. Now let's talk about a new movie just out. It's called Agora. The movie chronicles what happened to the Roman scholar Hypatia of Alexandria, who lived from 376 to 415. A child prodigy who was tutored by scholars. In fact, her dad was the last known librarian at the library in Alexandria. She became a scholar in mathematics, astronomy, and the natural sciences. She was appointed head of the University of Alexandria. We only know of her views and work. In her work, very little of her actual work survives, but we know a lot because of what her students later wrote about her. And we know that she was a popular figure, an outstanding teacher who found herself butting heads with the Bishop of Alexandria, who became her noted enemy. And to make a short story even shorter, she was set upon, it is believed, at the behest of the bishop by a mob of Christian monks as she headed to her weekly lecture at the university. She was dragged from her carriage, and in one of the most gruesome of executions, her limbs were pulled from their sockets. They plucked out her organs. They hacked her remains, allegedly with abalone shells, and her remains were burned. Alexandria was sacked. The great library of Alexandria was destroyed, and the Dark Ages were ushered in.
So, of course, in this current movie, which just came out last night, but not yet here in the Midwest, so unfortunately Dan and I haven't seen it, they take the usual liberties, of course, but it has a terrific director, Alejandro Amenábar. He's the Chilean who directed The Others, and that was that oxymoronic movie, A Rationalist Ghost Story, starring Nicole Kidman, you might remember it. And in Agora, it stars the equally terrific actress, Rachel Weisz, as Hypatia, and the movie portrays Hypatia as an atheist, and we have the movie trailer at least to play.
No, the heavens should be simple. They are not.
In the last days of the Roman Empire, at the fall of civilization, one woman, a legend, ahead of her time, stood to unite mankind.
Whatever may be going on in the streets, brothers, where are the troops?
No army could contain that mob. He's calling for the annihilation of women and children.
As long as God grants me the strength, I will purify this city.
All these years I've been studying, I could just unravel this.
Why should this assembly accept the counsel of a woman?
Enough!
If you choose to do nothing, though, you will continue to do the same thing over and over again. Until there is no one left in this city. No people for this government to govern.
I won't be able to put any longer.
I wanted you to be free.
I am free. You don't question what you believe. I must.
You don't question what you believe, but I must. I love that line in there where she says, your God has yet to prove himself more merciful than his predecessor. And look what the God of Christianity did to the world. Of course, Annie, Laurie, and I have not seen Agora yet. We'll have to take the word of New York Times reviewer A.O. Scott, who writes this week, it is entirely, not dogmatically, but stubbornly on the side of reason, science, and liberalism, values opposed by superstition, fundamentalism, and political expediency. The world of Alexandria and the later years of the Roman Empire is one in which the forces of intolerance, whatever deity they profess, always seem to have the upper hand, in which even ostensibly rational, compassionate rulers collaborate with the faith-based holy warriors. The parallels between then and now are hardly subtle. The warning bell that Agora sounds may be loud and at times a little grating, but what's wrong with that? The skeptical and the secular also need stories of martyrdom and rousing acts of cinematic preaching.
So we'll be looking forward to seeing it. Rachel Weisz, who was educated at Cambridge, has been making some interesting comments in the press too, saying that the hot topic today is Islamic fundamentalism, but in Agora, it's the Christians who are the fundamentalists. So try to go see this cautionary tale. And Lake Hypatia, Alabama, which is a retreat that the foundation has with its chapter there, is named for Lake Hypatia.
Named for that.
And you can find out more about the 4th of July event there at our website at fffrf.org.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. You mean Lake Hypatia was named for Hypatia?
That's right.
And in the movie, she's called an atheist. So it's an atheist retreat. Not a retreat, but an atheist advance. Coming up, we'll talk with a 21st century woman scholar, Barbara G. Walker, about her latest book, a wonderful collection of articles. The book is called Man Made God. So stay tuned.
This is Daniel Dennett, author of Breaking the Spell, and you're listening to Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker.
And we're very happy to have again with us a very interesting guest on the telephone, Barbara G. Walker. Barbara is an atheist and a feminist. She's the author of a book called The Woman's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets, and well over 20 other books, many published by Harper and Row. Her newest book is called Man Made God. Some of the chapters were previously excerpted in her columns for Free Thought Today, which is our newspaper. And she's also an expert known to knitters worldwide, having authored a treasuring of knitting patterns, a classic in 1968, reprinted in 1998, and many other books on knitting. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Barbara.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to be here.
I really chuckled at the cover of your new book, Man Made God, because you have that traditional Michelangelo painting, you know, but you've got them reversed.
Yes.
You have God down below, and you have, I guess that's Adam, reaching down and creating a God.
So I like the view of Adam, too. He has this casual sort of sleepy look, like he's making God with a little bit of his mind.
An afterthought.
Yeah.
And the drooping finger, the limp wrist, God creator.
Well, you know, if you can create a God that easy, you could just erase it just as easily, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Now, I noticed that your book, it has, I didn't count them, but it looks like 100 articles or more, 100 chapters. They're shortish. They're easy to read nuggets.
No, actually, they're essays. There are 31 of them altogether.
Oh, I see, with subtitles.
With subtitles.
Yeah, okay.
And you have published 13 of them so far.
Wow. Yeah.
In Free Thought Today.
Yeah, and we are looking forward to publishing more of them because you've kindly said we may do so.
And I noticed that there's 360 pages exactly in the book. Was that on purpose, 360 degrees?
No, I didn't notice that. Is that so?
That must be a God. How else can you explain something that came out like that? So what prompted this new book?
Well, I have been giving lectures around the area where I live. People have been asking me to present programs. I've been speaking to the UUs and the humanists and the skeptics and so forth. There are many such organizations.
You're
in
Florida.
My area, so I have been writing down these lectures for the past 8 or 10 years, and I just collected them into a book, and this is the result.
And I think that was also very much by audience demand, wasn't it? People wanting those.
Yes, very much so.
And you have a good following with the Free Thought Today readers, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful newspaper. I always enjoy it.
I like how the book is a balance of pretty heady scholarship in some cases, but then some real light personal stories. I just picked up this morning a couple of the chapters, and I read the one about prayer, and I learned something. You had a friend in school who said that when the priest prays, it's different from when us mere mortals pray.
Yes.
And that the priests... at least according to her, in the Roman Catholic tradition, because I wasn't Catholic, so I didn't know any of this stuff, they could actually force God to do something if they said the right magical words.
Well, it was quite surprising. This friend of childhood friend of mine who went to parochial school taught me a lot about Catholicism, which I wouldn't have known otherwise. But she did mention that they were paying a priest to pray her grandparents out of purgatory, which I thought was really a very strange idea, and it fascinated me. And I said, why couldn't they just pray by themselves? Can't they address God as well as a priest can? And she told me, no, the priests have a certain way of addressing God where he really listens.
Huh. Well,
and then I was thinking, well, if God doesn't listen, why are we bothering to pray at all?
And I think it amounted to maybe, what's it called, feathering his cap a little bit? You had to give a little money to make the whole thing.
Oh, of course. Always, always there is money.
But isn't that part of the difference between Catholic and Protestant traditions? The Catholics, you have a go-between, and some of the Protestants, you can commune directly.
So they say, and all these fundamentalist Protestant preachers are claiming that God speaks to them directly.
That's right.
They always know exactly what he wants, and they tell their congregations, God wants you to send me more money.
Huh. And God wants you to persecute gays, and God wants you to beat your wives. And doesn't seem like to be very nice stuff God wants.
God is a real monster when it comes to the biblical personification of him.
But I thought it was fascinating that in ancient times, maybe even today, that if they said the right name of God so many times, like the rosary was this repetitive thing. If you say the right words, the right number of times, you can unlock, you can force God to actually do something. And that was an ancient pagan practice, which the Catholic Church embraced, I guess, for money, right?
I think it's the practice of every religion that has ever been, because what is the use of a deity if you cannot access that deity and have it work your will? You know, if it's a rain god, you need rain, you have to address this person, this creature, and have him send rain. From the very beginning, from the first impression of gods anywhere, there has been contact through prayer or through ritual or something.
And it always seems to have an obsessive compulsive edge to it.
Oh, sure. Because it's directly modeled on the child's need of the parent. You know, all gods basically are parent figures. And the child needs to address the parent in for everything, for food, for nurture, for comfort, for warmth, for everything he needs. And I think that basic inner need in the human psyche is directly translated into what many people perceive as a deed for a deity. I think that's where it comes from psychologically.
And that would sort of be in agreement with, I know Richard Dawkins theorizes that the reason why religion takes is that it's evolutionary. Children are so dependent that there's survival. You can help a child survive if you teach them blind obedience to a certain
absolutely.
Point.
So. Even, it's not just humans, but every mammal depends utterly upon its mother when it's newborn. And, you know, most of the higher mammals teach their offspring, keep them with them for a long time, and teach them how to find food and how to survive. It's essential. And it goes along with motherhood. And, of course, motherhood has been denigrated since we established patriarchal gods. But I think that that is probably in our genes, and as Dawkins says, a product of evolution.
Now, I'm not sure if this turn of phrase is in your new book, Man Made God, but when you gave a speech before the Freedom from Religion Foundation, when we declared you a free thought heroine, mm-hmm. you said something very wise that's always stood with me, which is you said that childhood neuroses become huge adult problems, mm-hmm. cruelties, for example.
Right.
And when you say that the God of the Bible is a monster, I mean, how does all this, I know you address a lot of this in your book.
Yes, I point out that the God of the Old Testament, and indeed of the New, is very, very cruel. He orders genocides, He orders wars. He orders lots of people killed, plagues. I mean, there are just so many bad things he does. When I was a child reading the Bible, I was shocked to find out how evil he was. And I could not begin to respect such a character. And I asked myself, as a Christian, which I was once upon a time, why would God have to make his son be tortured to death before he was willing to forgive anybody? If he's so almighty and powerful, why not just forgive everybody right off? It doesn't make sense that you have to make someone suffer in order to forgive others.
Well, there's that verse in the Bible that says, without the shedding of blood, there's no remission of sin. So blood, right. There has to be a blood price somewhere in there.
Absolutely. The gods lived on blood once upon a time, you know. They were given blood sacrifices to keep them alive.
So speaking of sacrifices, we told you just before the show began that we've been talking about the new movie about Hypatia. Called Agora.
I look forward to that.
And there, talk about sacrifice. And I know you have some references, some passages about Hypatia in your new book.
Yes, I'm looking at it here. It's on page 24, and there's a quote from her. She says, "Fables should be taught as fables, myths as myths, and miracles as poetic fancies. To teach superstitions as truths is a most terrible thing. The child's mind accepts and believes them, and only through great pain and perhaps tragedy can the child be, in after years, relieved of them." End quote. And of course we know that Hypatia was murdered with extraordinary brutality by a gang of Christian monks led by the patriarch Cyril, who was later canonized by Pope Leo XIII in the year 1882. So they canonized cruel ones also. But the death of Hypatia evidently marked the end of intellectual progress in Egypt.
Now, I read that there's hardly anything surviving of Hypatia's own works because almost everything was destroyed. But some of those quotes, like the one you just gave us, came from students or offspring of students of hers who remembered her and remembered her saying those things.
Right. And about that same period, remember, Christians destroyed the enormous library in Alexandria, thus getting rid of all kinds of priceless manuscripts and records that would have been invaluable to historians if they still existed.
Like we know, we have scraps of volume 7 of a series of books, but the first 6 are totally gone, and we can only imagine what might have been in those previous volumes.
Yes. Well, of course, Christians have been very much opposed to intellectual-type women almost throughout their history, and women in general have been put down by the church most sincerely all the way through.
Well,
not just in the persecution of witches, but in general.
Well, we'll pick up those threads right after this break. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we're talking with Barbara G. Walker, the skeptical feminist, about her new book, God Made Man. Man Made God. We'll be right back.
As we go marching, marching, we're standing proud and tall. The rising of the women means the rising of us all. No more the drudge or idler, 10 that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories. Bread and roses, bread and roses, bread and roses.
My name is Bill Smythe, and I'm from Portland, Oregon. And I've been a practicing atheist for the last 40 years. And this is Bill on Free Thought Radio.
Thank you.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we have on the phone with us from Florida, esteemed author Barbara G. Walker. Her newest book just came out, Man Made God. When did it come out, Barbara?
Just a month ago.
So congratulations. And who published it?
It is published by Stellar House, and it is also, you can Google them. It's also available from Amazon.com or from Kindle or from your local bookstore, anywhere at all, you can get it.
Wow, you already have it on Kindle.
Oh, yeah.
That's fast.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading one of your articles about the goddess mother, and what you said there about how a lot of believers like to raise their hands, they reach up to this god, and how many of the goddesses' names start with an M, like Ma and Mary and Miriam and all of these, Mama, which where we get the word mammal for sucking, that sucking sound, and that humans who are worshiping are reaching up to their mama, basically, with their hands raised. And I thought that was a compelling image in your book, the research you've done into that.
Ma seems to be the primary syllable for the mother goddess. And ma, in some languages, means mother's breasts.
Ah.
And so ma is, you know, the primary. It's very much like the sound made by a crying baby. Ma, ma.
Or when we say, good, that kind of sucking,
Right. Which Dan always does when he likes his food. Now, we have been talking, I mean, it's been nice to change the subject a little bit, but we've been talking about abuse of women by religion, and I know you go into that quite a bit.
I do. I have one of my essays in the book is called Women and Religion, and it quotes a number of the fathers of the church who said such terrible things. Like St. Augustine said, God made man to rule and woman to obey. And St. Anthony said, when you see a woman, consider that you face not a human being, but the devil itself. The woman's voice is the hiss of the snake. He really hated women.
I feel like booing.
And then the early feminists in the 1900s, discovered that their sexism of their culture actually was a product of its religion. Matilda Jocelyn Gage, the immortal Matilda, wrote, I quote, "The most stupendous system of organized robbery known has been that of the church towards woman, a robbery that has not only taken her self-respect, but all rights of person, the fruits of her own industry, her opportunities of education, and the exercise of her own judgment." She pointed out that, quote, "it is the church and not the state to which the teaching of woman's inferiority is due. It is the church which primarily commanded the obedience of woman to man. And it is the church which stamps with religious authority the political and domestic degradation of woman." And then in 1919, we have Hypatia Bradley Bonner, and she said, quote, "The independence of women and the equalization of their rights has come only little by little, and every step has been gained in defiance of the church and the teaching of the scriptures." Elizabeth Cady Stanton, my ideal, wrote, quote, "The Bible and the church have been the greatest stumbling blocks in the way of women's emancipation. The whole tone of church teaching in regard to women is to the last degree contemptuous and degrading. The religious superstitions of women perpetuate their bondage more than all other adverse influences." Which is interesting because the majority of churches are actually supported by their women who do the work, who volunteer, who are always there willing to do the scut work while the ministers are getting their money and their perks.
Well,
and I think if all women realized what churches have been doing to them, this may come to an end, which is, of course, what the religions fear.
Well, I love Sonia Johnson, who was excommunicated by the Mormon Church for showing their role in in killing off the Equal Rights Amendment, she said if women everywhere next Sunday would just stay home on Sunday morning, the churches would collapse. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. And if they did it for 3 weeks in a row,
yeah,
the male congregations would thin out also.
I think it would be a huge painless revolution.
Yeah.
What a way to change the world.
Many of the churches, as Marilla Ricker said, couldn't it be run 3 weeks without the women? They don't get the credit, but they do the work.
Well,
and Barbara Simpson confidently expected, which hasn't happened, quote, as women's minds are freed by education, the church will disappear, and high time too. It is entirely a man-made institution, even if it is woman-supported. And I think that in the future, every thinking woman will congratulate herself that her sex had no finger in that pie. I hope that comes to be.
A very nice way to end this interview with Barbara G. Walker, whose new book is Man Made God. You can get it at Amazon.com. You can go to Stellar. It's Stellar House. Stellar House.
Mm-hmm.
And you are featured in Women Without Superstition. Barbara G. Walker also. In the anthology that the foundation put together. Thank you so much for joining us today. Congratulations.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Bye.
Thank you, Barbara. And thank you, Brian, for doing a regular good job of producer and engineer on the show. We also want to thank our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. You can hear all 214 previous shows at ffrf.org/radio, where you can also sign up for our podcast.
Ask for more information about FFRF at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. We're about to get out the June-July issue. You can go to our website and ask for a sample copy of the May while it lasts. We do hope you'll join us. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.